Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Streets Ahead, your podcast dedicated to all things cycling, walking and wheeling in the UK and beyond. I'm Laura Laker. And welcome to this special episode in which it's just me, my suitcase and one amazing guest, sat on a bench in the middle of one of the city's famous superblocks. There's also extra bonus content on our new Patreon. So that's right, if you want ad-free listening, behind the scenes and bonus content, and to help support the podcast, head to patreon.com/streetsaheadpodcast. We'll even send you some stickers. So in late 2023, I travelled to Barcelona by train from London. I was curious about the Superblocks programme, which you may already know involves some of the city's streets being pedestrianised, leaving others as thoroughfares for motor traffic and introducing things like green space and seating to the inner roads. Starting in 2022, streets in the Aixample district were transformed for walking and cycling, with a focus on cutting air pollution, overheating in summer, and improving accessibility. On those streets, people can drive in and out, but through traffic is discouraged. While I was there, I met Mark Neuenhausen, a researcher and professor in urban and transport planning, environment and health. Mark has quantified in his research the toll that poor urban and transport planning has on the environment and health, and some of it's pretty scary. But Mark was a delight to interview, and I'm excited to share this episode with you.
So this, to me, is the sound of Barcelona. Even on a quiet street, which this one isn't actually, this is the sound of my suitcase on the tiny little pavements, kind of like chocolate squares. The rubbers come off my suitcase wheels, and I am basically the noisiest thing in Barcelona. So I'm on Carrer de Sant Antoni. I'm on what we would consider a traditional kind of tactical urbanism street. What would have been four lanes of traffic, looks like two going one way, two going the other, is now closed to through traffic. What you can hear is a queue of traffic crossing the wide street on a single lane, one way road, sort of narrow little thing, and I'm in the crossroads. But yeah, there's really massive plant pots with trees in them just sort of shoved over to one side of the road. There's some temporary looking tables and chairs by what looks like a kind of cafe magazine kiosk in a shipping container. There's a couple of those. It's a pretty long street, established plane trees on one side, but there's people sitting. It's people walking. It's very much a people street. And tactical urbanism, if you don't know, is just where you take cheap materials and you pop them in the street, remove the traffic, and see what happens. It's a bit of an experiment, which then leads to more permanent changes, improvements, if you want to call them that. So what happened in New York under Jeanette Sadikar and Mayor Bloomberg, when they pedestrianised Times Square, this was the kind of materials they used. And this taken off all over the world. Tell me how to pronounce your name.
Mark Neuenhausen. Easy.
Yeah, that's easy.
Neuenhausen. Yeah.
And we are here in the heart of the Aixample.
Exemplar.
Ariadna. I know, not easy. Good Catalan, but... Or if you want to do it in Castellano, it's Eixancha.
Eixancha.
Yeah, yeah.
I was wandering around here and then trying to pronounce the names, just sort of talking to the... Just observing what was happening, and I kept trying to pronounce some street names, and I'm sure sounded like Del Boy.
Pronunciation is also not very good.
Because you're Dutch. But you've been here 15 years.
Yeah, so yeah. No, 16 years. 17 16? Years almost. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
you speak right. Catalan and Spanish. And, and you are a...
A researcher, professor in urban and transport planning, environment and health. So I'm very much interested in what are the health impacts of our current urban and transport planning practices in cities. Yeah. How it affects environmental exposures, how it affects health, what is the impact, you know, how many people die as a result, how many people get ill as a result. Yeah. And unfortunately, there's still quite a lot, in particular in a city like Barcelona.
Yes, yes. And I think you've said that something like 7% of premature mortality is a result of air pollution in Barcelona?
Something like that, yeah. Altogether, we've got, we did some estimation, and about 20% of mortality, what we see here, around 3,000 deaths, are a result of what I call poor urban and transport planning.
Right.
So
that's air pollution.
Yeah, that's air pollution, the lack of green space, because, you know, the cars take up so much space that you don't have enough green space, noise. Urban heat island effects, because, you know, the center is much warmer than surrounding areas. Yeah. And then also the lack of physical activity.
Yeah.
Physical activity is extremely important for people, for physical health, for mental health. So, you know, when people can't go out, cycle, walk, etc., then often it's difficult to get to the right levels of physical activity.
Yeah. So people talk about incidental exercise or activity, the kind of stuff that you do on a day-to-day basis you don't necessarily have to think about.
No, that's right. I mean, you know, if you cycle to work or to your shops or you walk, etc., you get quite a bit of physical activity, and that may be already enough actually to, you know, for your the daily recommendations that the World Health Organization gives. So, but often, you know, people don't have the opportunity to do that. I mean, now here in Barcelona, it's to some extent possible. It's a compact city. Quite a lot of people walk or take public transport, which also involves some walking. But then there are still a lot of people that actually rely on the car. And, you know, they sit at home, watch the TV, step in the car, go to work, sit at their desk the whole day and go back in the car. Often too much work, no time to do physical activity. That's why I always say, you know, build it into your daily life.
Yeah.
Get your bicycle, cycle. I mean, the best if you can cycle half an hour to your work, half an hour back. I mean, that if it goes up a little bit, a little hill, even better. Get your heartbeat up. Very good for you. Very, very important for health.
And it's mostly flat Barcelona, but there is Montjuïc.
Montjuïc.
Oh, my goodness. That bad pronunciation, which I just cycled up, and apparently you run up.
Yeah, I run up. I go running 2-3 times per week, and then I run up to the castle.
2-3 times a week?
Yeah,
that's quite a big hill.
Oh, yeah, but it's nice running. It's very important. It's very important for my mental health. It clears my brain. I think I can recommend it to anyone.
Wow.
If you're working, too much to do, and then, you know, you go running, and then at once it clears up your brain. Wonderful. Yeah. The world looks so different after a run. The legs are quite tired, but, you know, the brain is clear. I mean, that's important for me.
Yeah, yeah.
In particular, because I've got a desk job. I work at a computer. So, you know, and everyone needs to have this kind of physical activity, this kind of doing something. I mean, that... Yeah. And so that's, for me, it's very nice. And the Montjuïc is very good. We also have Collserola on the other side. I don't know if you've been to the Carretera de las Aguas that runs along Collserola. It's a path of about 10 kilometers. You can also cycle or walk. You have a beautiful view over Barcelona. I mean, it's the best way to see Barcelona. Go up with the bike or walk. And then, you know, you get your physical activity while at the same time having a beautiful view of Barcelona.
Yeah, it's a great city. I've really enjoyed being here. And maybe we should describe the scene around us, because we are in...
A lot of screaming kids now.
Yeah, they're getting some of their energy out, doing some climbing on some logs.
The school has just finished, I think. You know, so imagine, a year ago, we wouldn't be able to sit here.
We're at a crossroads, basically, aren't
we? This was just a road with lots of cars. So over the last year, they transformed this in what we call a super year,
a super block road.
Not exactly, not the full super block, but so they're taking out the motorized traffic, and now people can walk and cycle here, and also the kids can play here after school. Oh. So here we're on the junction of Carré Conseil de Seine and Carré Roquefort. And that's where you can see it's wonderful here,
yeah.
No? Except these kids are screaming like crazy. I don't know what's happening.
They're just excited. They've probably been sat down all day. This is their version of running up Montjuïc. Montjuïc! Damn it.
It's one of these things that, you know, you feel sorry for these kids nowadays. And the sitting. I mean, that they have to sit the whole day and, you know, it's so lovely for them to be out.
Yeah.
And like in particular here, we've got also quite a bit of green space. So now part of the super blocks is actually, you know, that the motorized traffic disappears, but also put in more green space.
Yeah.
And the green space is super important, not only just to look at, you know, it's very good, again, for mental health, it relaxes your brain, but also to reduce the heat island effects.
Mm-hmm. So creates shade.
It provides shade and, you know, also a bit of humidity here. Mm. And that makes this area quite a bit cooler than if you have a lot of asphalt, which you normally have.
So. Have they measured it, the difference in summer? Because it's only been here, what, 6 months, you said? Six months ago.
It's about 5-6 degrees difference to other roads. I mean, it goes up to 10, I think,
because,
at times.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it makes a big difference. And here, there are not even that many trees.
They're obviously not fully grown. They're not small, but they're not big.
Yeah.
And there's six kind of air little hillocks of planting and soil.
Yeah, yeah.
That are fenced off, and then the middle is a sort of fine gravel.
Yeah, gravel. So this is also good because the rainwater can go in there. Because you know the other thing, what's happening? Do you know, by the way? I think you get almost as much rain per year in London and in Barcelona.
I did not know this.
But you know, the difference is that in London, mm-hmm. you get every day a little bit, the drizzle, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Here it comes down in 1 or 2 hours and it's completely flooded everything. So, and that, you know, if you have asphalt, this in, this kind of roads where the water can't go down, it's bad. But like this, I mean, when there is a bit of soil, it can also go down in here for this mm-hmm. green things. I mean, it also can slowly go away, so that's better. I mean,
it doesn't overwhelm the drainage system and everything.
Yeah, that's right. That's the we can't swim. If there's been a lot of rain, we never can swim.
It goes straight into the sea.
It's overflow and it goes into the beach. So you're not
same
allowed
in London.
To. You're not allowed to swim for 3 days.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, there's so much rubbish that goes down and through the sewers.
Yeah.
And normally they can deal with it, but, you know, here when it rains, you can really, in 1 hour, you can get so much water coming down. It's just incredible, I mean. Now it hasn't been, and we probably very soon they will be bringing in water by ship from further down, from Valencia, because we don't have enough water at the moment.
Wow.
The reservoirs are very low. We have a desalination plant, but it doesn't produce enough. I mean, it's also the last 2 summers have been super hot. Normally, you've got two weeks that are too hot, but this time, you know, we had 3 months that are way too hot. So, and it becomes a real problem because you know, also when you have this heat waves, you know, this combined with the urban heat island effect, people die as a result. You get heart attacks, you know, it's pretty bad for your mental health.
So that's
a big problem. We really feel the impacts of climate change at the moment,
and cities around the world are facing this problem, maybe not to the same extent. And we got a taste of this in the UK last year when it reached 41 degrees in London for a couple of days and when it doesn't cool down at night. And that's when you get the problems.
It's a real problem, and you see it in many cities, in Europe, and it becomes worse and worse.
Yeah.
I mean,
interest is in the sort of intersection between climate change and health.
Climate change, health, urban planning, mm-hmm. air pollution.
Yeah.
Because air pollution, you know, many of the cities in Europe still have too much air pollution. We know that we do this study around 1,000 cities in Europe where we look at the impacts of current levels of air pollution.
Yes.
Lack of green space, urban heat island effects, noise, lack of physical activity. And we estimate that every year there are more than 200,000 premature deaths in these 1,000 cities because of the current air pollution levels. They're still way too high. They need to be reduced. But they're going down a bit, but not fast enough. At the same time, we know we see around 40,000, 43,000 premature deaths because of the lack of green space in cities.
And so that's a measurable impact on mortality, a lack of green space.
Definitely,
What are the effects?
Well, you know, you have to imagine, we as humans, we've been running around for 40,000 years out in nature, and then at once we come in a city where it doesn't feel natural. You know, everything is squared in a way that normally we're more used to natural forms. It relaxes us. I mean, when you look to a tree, actually you get this relaxation over you.
And you can almost feel it. I don't know if it's because you're saying it, but when I glanced over to those trees, I almost felt a little thing in my chest, like, those are nice trees.
But it's true. So, you know, there are many studies now that show that your brain, you know, certain parts in your brain, just the activity goes down and other parts go up, depending what it is. So
it's related to stress.
Yeah, it's related to stress. I mean, that. So, you know, if you don't get enough green space, you may get depressed, you may get anxiety. What the best is just to, you know, sit down, look at a tree, and, you know, you feel yourself relaxed, relaxing. I mean, that, you know, and if that doesn't help, you get on your bicycle and you cycle a long way, and it's got more or less same effect. I mean, and that's what we need in a way. You know, we need more cities where people can walk, cycle, enjoy green space. And unfortunately, many of our cities, you know, they're too car dominated. I mean, and I put just asphalt. It's all asphalt. We have a lot of cars. I mean, it's not natural for us. It's not good for us.
Yeah.
I mean, that. And that's why we need to change. That's why we need more super blocks like here. I mean, we should transform the whole city into this. But unfortunately, not everyone agrees. I mean, that's a real shame.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? That does seem to be the one thing. I think the kind of constituent parts, the green space, the more walking and cycling, the better health, few people would argue with. But when it comes to actually changing, that's the hard bit for people, isn't it? That's where resistance happens. And I think this has happened in Barcelona, where the Superblocks program has been, am I right, paused?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. So the Superblock program was to a large extent promoted by the previous government under Ada Colau and Janet Sanz. And unfortunately, they lost power in the May election. And now we've got a new mayor. And he doesn't believe kind of in the Superblocks. I mean, he's more on the car side. There's this kind of misconception that if you want to have a lot of commercial activity, that you need to have cars. I mean, it's nonsense. Yeah? Most of the research shows the opposite, actually. It's when you make areas more attractive, streets more attractive, more pedestrianized, you get more retail sales, etc. But so the kind of practice hasn't caught up with the theory or what we've seen in other studies. And so this mayor thinks that, no, we need to have cars, we need to have activity, people should have the freedom to drive around. It's okay to kill a few people, you know, with air pollution and noise and this kind of things. And so it is a real shame. I mean, and so they put in some other programs. They want to put a bit more green space, but not in areas where many people are. They want to cover the rondas, the ring roads around Barcelona. Super expensive and not many benefits. Mm. You know, it's not where people live. What we want is near where people live, green space. You know, that you step out of your door and you can see green space. Mm-hmm. You can walk around in a street with a lot of trees, no cars, and you enjoy it. That's what we want in our cities. I mean, that.
Because tourists might know the Ramblas and the kind of narrow parts of the city, but a lot of it, this area that we're in, is big blocks. It's kind of American style street pattern, I guess, or what maybe people would be familiar with is American style. One big one-way streets, a lot of traffic. I was quite surprised actually walking around. Some of the roads are very kind of very, very car dominated and very wide and noisy.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's what happened, you know, in the in the 60s, 70s, they thought that the car was great. I mean, originally, you know, the city was designed by Ildefonso Dao around 1850 to have this wide open streets with a lot of fresh air that people could walk around and breathe in the fresh air. You know, you had the trams and... you know, before they were living in the Gotico, the old city, all crammed together. So he had this vision of making the city healthy, building this extension. Example is the extension. Mm-hmm. That's what it's called. Uh-huh. That's the translation for it. So he envisioned this, you know, where people had this wide streets they could walk around. And then so these blocks together, these are the housing blocks. There would be also shops, there would be work. So it would be this kind of mixed land use. You would have your doctor there. And so you didn't have to go very far. You would live within one neighborhood where you had everything which you could do. I mean,
it's quite forward thinking. I mean, it's what people might call a 15-minute city or, it's mixed use urban planning, basically.
That's right. I mean, it's the 15-minute city. So that's the idea going back, you know, to that idea. I mean, that, and he was very forward thinking. I mean, the funny thing is he was an engineer. He looked at it from an engineer. I mean, if you look at his book that he wrote about it, he had all formulas for it, how to calculate how big the blocks could be and this kind of thing. And it's amazing. I mean, and we lost that. We've lost that over the years, to be honest. I mean, you know, and a lot of what we do in urban planning, it's terrible. You know, we just plan all these houses just one by themselves, the car in front of the door, it causes a lot of sprawl.
Yeah.
And that's terrible. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, we lost this kind of healthy, and it's not healthy, this sprawl. I mean,
that's
what I said, people sit in their car all the day. Yeah. You know, one of the big problems here in Barcelona is, of course, the cars that you see. We've got about 300,000-400,000 cars coming into the city every day.
And the outskirts, commuters.
Yeah, from the metropolitan area. So these are commuters. So in a way, you know, people here in Barcelona suffer because of that, because they get the air pollution that has been brought in.
And there is a metro system, but it doesn't go out that far, am I right?
It goes out quite far, but, you know, the issue is that people... I mean, probably public transport is not enough in a way, but, you know, there is, you need to make a bit more effort with public transport.
Yeah.
Typically, wherever you go, public transport takes almost twice as long as going by car. Wherever you go, you know, throughout Europe or whatever, that's normally the general rule. So, and it's also here. I mean, if you come from another little town or city here, probably you can drive in about 20 minutes or when there is no traffic. Mm-hmm. Normally you end up 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. If you do it by public transport, it's 40 minutes.
Okay.
So people that can afford it, and typically what you see, these are more middle-aged white men sitting in the car driving in. I mean, that women tend to use more public transport.
Yeah.
Poorer people tend to use more public transport. Yeah. And so you get this equity issue there as well. I mean, that it's not fair. Some people just take over the city by their car. It's funny because only 1 out of 4 trip is actually by car in Barcelona.
Really?
While if you look around, you think that everyone
so
goes by
dominant,
car.
Isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but because they take up so much space.
Mm.
You know, cars take up so much space. Can be used in a much better way.
Yeah.
I mean, that I'm always, you know, looking around and I'm thinking, God, look at these streets. If just now you got a lot of asphalt, it's hot in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Let's imagine if you had lots of trees, and then, you know, it would be much cooler. It wouldn't be so much noise, no air pollution, much healthier environment. That, so we still have a bit of to go. But but you know, about 1 out of 3 trips is by people walking, because it's quite a compact city.
It is.
And then a public transport system is very good and very successful.
Yeah.
Buses, metro, I mean, get you around, and it gives you also freedom. It's great for the kids. I mean, I've got a son who's 15. You know, he got a travel card, 30 euros a one-off, and then he just can travel all around the city on public transport. Gives so much freedom.
A year?
No, it's a one-off.
Just once?
And when you lose it, you need to buy another card.
Wow.
But otherwise, up to 16, it's...
Wow.
I know, it's
a bargain.
It's a bargain, yeah. But, you know, it gives also the kids freedom. I mean, you know, many parents have to take their kids in the car to whatever. I mean, the kids are always dependent on their parents. And the parents complain that they need to take the kids around. Now, I come from the Netherlands, so the kids cycle. Most kids cycle because it gives them freedom, independence. You know, here they use public transport to do this because the cycling is still a bit too dangerous in a way.
Yeah, I did my first trips on a bike in Barcelona today, and I've obviously seen a lot of bike lanes around. There's quite a few. It seems pretty good to me as a British person. Maybe not to you as a Dutch person, but a lot of this is quite new. And as I understand it, a lot of these bike lanes have kind of taken a traffic lane out on some of these wide roads that we've got in the city.
You know, under the previous government, they doubled the cycling lanes. The kilometres, I think it goes up to 250 kilometres now around the city. So that's very good. And it's not only to increase cycling, but also to make the roads smaller for cars, so to slow down, because that's the other fact. Well, you know, before the cars had a lot of space and then they speed up. And so if you make the space smaller for cars by putting in a cycling lane, then there's not as much space, so that it's always automatically slow down. So that was also one of the benefits for that. But of course now you can cycle more, but the network is not so good yet, because you cycle sometimes and then at once you're in between a lot of cars. Mm-hmm. They haven't done it. I mean, if you go to Plaza Urquinoona, at once you end up in between all the cars, five lanes and cars. I mean, it's scary as a cyclist. I mean, you know, I don't cycle everywhere. I mean, I've got my own bike, but I've picked my routes. I know where I can go if not too much traffic, and where it's a bit more enjoyable. So, yeah.
We were talking about businesses. Obviously, people are kind of coming to these pedestrianised streets. You said before, this has become a bit of a destination. If you're having a little walk during the day, maybe if you're working from home, it's just a nice place to come and stroll around. And there is some traffic coming in and out. There's some delivery, quite a few delivery vans, I've noticed. Yeah. It generally is a very popular street with pedestrians.
Yeah, there was recently was a study in, I think it was 12 Spanish cities, where they looked at retail sales in pedestrianized areas. You know, often people think, the thought is generally from, if people can't come by car, then, you know, resale sales go down, I mean, because people can't take... Actually, there, what they saw was the retail sales actually went up. You know, people were hanging around, buying more, enjoying these pedestrianized areas. So in that way, you know, if you want to do it for retail, just pedestrianize these places, you know, take the cars out. I mean, make it a much nicer environment that people can hang around. And that's what we said, this Conseil de Seine. Now you see a lot of people that just choose to walk here when they go home. I've spoken to so many people, you know, they need their work somewhere there or they live there. And then they say, after work, I just walk down Conseil de Seine, I walk home, because it's just nice, enjoyable. I mean, it relaxes me.
Decompression.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that, you know, a lot of people have stressful jobs. I mean, the worst way you can do is step in your car. You get more stressed, and particularly when you get, again, trapped in traffic. I mean, that, you know, it infuriates people often. But
it's kind of rush hour now, I guess. It's 5:15, kids are out of school, and I'm surprised at how busy it is in a way. I mean, I think I've come through here before, or I've seen a couple of these crossroads. I'm not sure if... I did see this particular one, because I remember that there's a florist called Laura Flores, but it's really busy. It's amazing. People walking their dogs...
Yes,
kids.
That's right. So the schools are out and some of the dads are working. But a lot of people work until 8 or 9, so it's probably gets busier also later. But it's interesting to see when you sit down here how it changes also. Who's sitting down, who's walking around, you know. That's the wonderful thing here. That I used to live in Poblenou before there. You've got the Rambla de Poblenou. It's one of my favorite streets in Barcelona, because... You know, it's pedestrian with a cycling lane on the side. It's a lot of trees, green space. There are shops. People live there. It's a real mixed area. But then if you go a bit in the afternoon, at some states, the youngsters coming from school, then you got older people sitting there with all their friends around. And then a bit later is another group, kids, moms with kids or so, or dads with kids, you know. Yeah. And so you throughout... the day you get different groups actually enjoying this particular spaces, I think, and that's so nice, because, you know, there's nothing more important than that people can look at each other and build up some trust. I mean, if people sitting at home and thinking, you know, what's going on in the world, it's terrible.
It's a good point, actually. I guess people watching does have a purpose. It sort of connects you, even in an abstract way. If you're never going to see that person again, if you look at them and you think, oh, you know, I'm not the only one living here.
No, that's right. I mean, it builds trust. It builds community feeling. I mean, that And, you know, that's super important, particularly in our society nowadays, where a lot of people sit on social media or watch TV or whatever, you know, and they get all kind of strange thoughts in their head. I mean, and then, you know, you go out, you sit here and you think, oh, there's so many normal people. I mean, people like me, I mean.
Yeah. And I guess the space is working well if you are getting these different groups during the day. You've described streets, green areas and services as the hardware of the city, and I guess the transport is how you kind of navigate that, which I think is quite a nice way of describing it, hardware.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, it's what it is, isn't it? That, you know, these areas, and also we definitely need more green in Barcelona, but unfortunately also because of the drought, they can't water the plants. I mean.
Oh, I see. There's a kind of hose pipe ban.
Yeah.
And they're having to wash down the streets because it kind of gets smelly. If it's not raining, dog mess and stuff.
I know, it's a big problem. And the tourists are peeing in the street.
Yeah, there's definitely a smell in some corners. It's quite strong.
Yeah. And, you know, the Brits have a bit of a reputation.
Sorry. We do. It's funny because it's true. We do have a bad reputation. Oh, God. So it seems like a bit of a pause, but maybe in terms of the greening of dense residential areas like this one, where everyone's in flats, but perhaps this shows something to other cities about what can be done and the impact of these kind of measures have if they're done well.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I mean, Barcelona is a great city, you know, and it can be even better. I mean, if you saw what was this before and what is now, you feel already so much more energy, to relax. And so you have to realize that people have to go outside here also in the summer because the apartments are fairly small. Mm-hmm. They get very hot. Not many people have air conditioning.
Oh, really?
Still. So, you know, at night people come out and they need to have spaces to go out. On a summer night, people sit here until 11, 12 o'clock, just, you know, because they can't sit inside. The apartment's small, hot. I mean, so it's, public spaces are very important for us. I mean, you know, if you get a big house and a big garden, it's nice, but then you need to be outside the city. Mm-hmm. You can't be in the city then.
Yeah.
And this, we know that this kind of compact living, this kind of apartment building is the most sustainable way of living, and that's what we also need. I mean, we need to go much more this way. We can't, you know, rely on people driving around all the time, causing a lot of CO2 emissions. I think 25% of our CO2 emissions, greenhouse gases, are coming from traffic, and we need to reduce that.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are very good reasons to doing this, because otherwise the effects are really severe. But we also can see the benefits because it would reduce air pollution levels, the noise, what is also very important for us, for our health.
Yeah, we don't talk about noise very much, do we? Or I think it's one of those things that people don't realise, but it's actually incredibly bad for our health. It's sort of second to air pollution, I've heard.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't know why it is. You know, a lot of people say always you get used to the noise. And actually, you never get used to the noise. It's bad for your body. You know, it causes physiological stress responses.
Things like strokes, heart attacks.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, and so you never get used to it. It's only you get used to, you know, you realize, though, when it's quiet during COVID time, remember then we had the lockdowns, and once people said, oh, it's so nice to be in the city, no noise, I mean, it's so quiet, you can walk around, I mean, and then thought, you know, everything relaxed, and unfortunately it doesn't get the attention it deserves a lot. But you know, it's difficult because also there's a lot of focus on air pollution, and there's so many studies on this, and there's a whole community working on it, and then it's already so difficult to lower air pollution levels. It takes so much effort doing this. I mean, at the moment we're discussing the ambient air quality directives in Europe. I mean, and there's going so much effort in it to try to get tighter limits, and you know, you only have, you can allocate so many resources to this, so that we're a small community.
Yeah, it's from the same source though, isn't it? It's traffic again. It's motor traffic.
Traffic, but Then I must say, sometimes what you get, though, is like in this areas, we had some complaints also because you get areas that they put cafes outside and then it's people out at night shouting and this kind of thing. So there are some other sources as well.
Okay.
And of course, then in some cities, it's also airplanes, it's trains and this kind of things. But yes, traffic, motorized traffic from cars, I mean, it's one of the main sources.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've got a very noisy moped coming through, as if to illustrate.
We have a big problem here in Barcelona with motors. There was once a mayor who thought it was a good idea that people would, you know, get a motorbike and go around the city. So we're the city with the most...
Oh, yeah, there's loads of motorbikes. I was wrong. It's a delivery cart with noisy wheels. This is like my suitcase. This sounds like my suitcase.
I know, it's very noisy, no?
But rubber's come off the wheels.
Yeah. But, you know, there are around 300,000 motorbikes in Barcelona.
Oh, wow.
And they're dreadful for noise. They make so much noise.
So noisy.
In particular, when you go to the smaller streets, because the sound keeps hanging around, bounces up and down.
Yeah.
And so the street where I live, it's a small street, and you have one motorbike going through, and it's terrible. I mean, you know, it's... I just hate the thing. It's like a mosquito that you have all the time around. But then worse, I mean.
And some guys get them
for me, I would get rid of them. What I don't understand, so I was in China. You go there and all the motorbikes are electric.
Really, already?
They're very quiet.
Wow.
Oh, yes. You need to be very careful not to get run over because they're so quiet you don't hear them coming. But they're all electric. I mean, and I don't know why they don't promote them here much. You have some of the rental ones here are... electric, but they should make them all electric because they're nice, quiet.
So many mopeds. I've noticed a lot of moped parking. Rows and rows and rows of them.
Yeah, no, it's a problem, eh? Because they park where pedestrians are supposed to walk. So in that way, it's a big problem as well. They take up space that shouldn't be. I think the worst is I've never looked into this, but I think the people that have a motorbike tend to have also a car. So it's not that they have one or the other. No, they have both of them. That's kind of what I'm thinking. And then you've got a lot of people that don't have anything. I think half the people living in Barcelona don't own a car.
I met someone the other day that had a bicycle that he'd converted to an electric bike that went 50 km/h. He asked if I wanted to have a go, and I said, no, I'd rather live, thank you.
Oh, no, that's... electric bikes are good. I mean, because you said that Barcelona is flat. Actually, it's not. When you go to Collserola, it goes up slowly.
Okay.
You know what happened? This is a nice story as well. We have the bike sharing system, the Bicing.
Yeah.
And so it was super successful. So they have the normal one. But what happened was that people would come down from kind of up from Collserola down on the bike,
never
but then they
the bike back.
And they wouldn't bring it back. So and then now they've made them electric, so you can actually, it's easy to go back. So there are quite a few electric bikes and the normal bikes, but so when people go back normally they take the electric one that because you know when it's hot in the summer it's more difficult to cycle, you get very sweaty, so it's not very nice. But so in that way I think electric bikes are good and get people to cycle. But then if you look, for example, the experience in the Netherlands, you know, a lot of people getting now electric bikes, and it allows older people also to cycle. I mean, up to 70, 80 now people cycle. But also as a result, you see many more traffic deaths among cyclists because a lot of the older users, I mean... You know, the bike goes too fast for them.
Yeah,
they fall
quite a lot
off
of
and
power, isn't there?
Yeah.
Watts is quite a lot.
So now the traffic deaths have gone up in the Netherlands because of the use of electric bikes.
Didn't realise this.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'd heard, but I didn't. Yeah.
And the level of physical activity has gone down in the Netherlands because of the electric bikes, because it takes shorter time for cycling.
But aren't people cycling longer, or is it? It's not one is not outweighed by the other.
No, it appears not to be that. Not for the short term, perhaps in the longer term, because you know normally what you get, as with cars. I mean, if you make it easier for people to drive, for example, to a certain place, they go live further away because it's cheaper. So it's always this thing, you know, also for traffic planning, they say we make people living, the road gets very busy, we need to make a bit more road to make it a bit wider or so that. And then, you know, for a few years, it's easier to traffic, and then people think, well, I'm going to live a little bit further away because it's easier to come in. And so it defines the purpose in a way, because you get more and more sprawl, people living further away, and you get many more kilometers driven. So, and that's what we've been doing the last 50 years. you know, building up such a car dependency with how we do the planning, with more and more sprawl. I mean, it's terrible. I mean, that and that's why we need to go back more to compact living, to 50-minute cities, to super blocks, you know, get things much closer together. I mean,
much nicer as well, not having to spend so much time every day commuting, stressed, stuck in traffic, sitting down.
I know, it's terrible. I mean, that we know we did a study, European study called PASTA. And then,
oh, I know PASTA. I've heard of PASTA.
You've heard of PASTA?
Yes.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, it's famous PASTA.
Yes.
It was a wonderful study that, and we had also a sample of around 10,000 people in Europe. And so we had also car drivers, motorists, and cyclists, walking, pedestrians, etc. And then we saw also differences because the cyclists were less stressed than the car drivers.
Yeah.
Also, they were on average 4 kilos lighter than the car drivers.
So you're comparing. Explain for people who haven't heard of PASTA.
So PASTA was a study in 7 cities in Europe where we looked at sustainable transport practices. And then for each city, we interviewed around 2,000 people and followed them up over time to see, you know, what were they doing, how were they getting around, what were they using, car, public transport, cycling to get around to their work or other destinations. And then also we did some health measures. I mean, we looked at mental health, we looked at weight and this kind of things. And so we got a much better picture now why people were using public transport or active transportation. It was our goal. But then also the differences, what was the impact on their mental health, on their weight. So it was a very interesting and important study. So we got much more insight what is needed. And one of them was also what we did in PASTA. We looked in 167 cities, the relationship between the availability of cycling infrastructure. So we looked at it, how much cycling infrastructure is there in kilometers per 100,000 people, and the mode share of cycling in the city. So how many people were actually cycling versus car. And what we saw, that up to about 25% mode share of cycling, so 1 out of 4 trips by cycling, there was a direct relationship between the availability of cycling infrastructure and people cycling.
Wow.
So, you know, what tells me is that you need to have safe cycling infrastructure for people to get people cycling.
Wow.
If you don't have that, forget about it. People are too scared to get run over, to get an accident. In this way, that, and so you need to build this infrastructure, and that was the reason why many cities are actually building cycling infrastructure. So over the last 10 years, we've seen a real increase in many cities. Unfortunately, we see now a little bit the opposite. A number of cities have been taken over by right-wing political parties, or planning even to take away a cycling lane. That's crazy. I mean, I want to give space back to the car again. I mean, so we're going back in time for this. I mean,
maybe it's a case of 2 steps forward, 1 step back.
Exactly. But let's hope that people choose to go the healthy way and just keep the cycling path and enjoy what it is, and you know, reduce car use.
Yeah. So your latest research is going to be out when? Your 1,000 cities?
Oh, the 1,000 cities is ongoing. It's coming, and every 6 months we have another paper on this. So it's at the moment, we have some funding from the European Commission under the Horizon project. And so we have a project called UBD Policy. If you want to look at the website, ubdpolicy.eu, you can get all the information on the 1,000 cities that we look at, the estimates on health. Also, we're having a number of case city studies where we look at the practices, talk to stakeholders, see what they would like to have. We try to model the different scenarios for the future, see what are the impacts on health. So it's a larger program. And, you know, being in academia, being in research, we need to keep publishing papers. So keep looking out for them. Really good, the papers.
I heard you were one of the top 1% of cited scientists in the world, or researchers in the world?
Yeah, supposedly that there are around 7,000 of us around the world, so I'm one of them, but I don't know. But
busy.
You know, it's not how much you publish, it's how good the publications are as well, and how important it is. And what I like about also the 1,000 cities, that it can have a real impact on practice, and I think that's very important. You know, nowadays a lot gets published, but not always has an impact on society. Well, I believe what we're producing, the health estimates, before cities said, oh, we don't have health estimates, you know, related to air pollution in our city or to our, you know, other things, what's happening in the city. And now actually we have. We have a website. Cities can go and have a look to see what is the impact on mortality related to air pollution in their city. How many deaths do you are there as a result? So they can then build up policies to reduce the number of deaths in the city. And I think that's quite important.
Could you take a scheme like this square with the trees and the removing the paving, and say if we were to do this to another block, what would the health impact be?
So we did a study a few years ago, what if we would implement 500 super blocks? So the person behind us, Salvador Rueda, envisaged to have 500 super blocks here in Barcelona. At the moment we have three, by the way.
Wow.
But we did a modeling exercise from if they would be all implemented. So we modeled, we saw traffic reduction, air pollution reduction, more physical activity, more green space. And we estimated that you could prevent almost 700 premature deaths each year here in Barcelona if you would implement all the 500 superblocks.
Wow.
That's a lot, eh?
There's so many. That's so many people's lives.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's not only, you know, people's life. You have to also think what are the impacts on children. I mean, it's our future generation. Because, you know, so many people get childhood asthma as a result of air pollution. We know that a third of cases of childhood asthma as a result of air pollution in Europe. We know there are 200,000 cases, new cases of childhood asthma because of air pollution in Europe. Here in the city, we
every
see
year 200,000.
Every year, yeah, yeah, it's a large number. Wow. Eh? Here we see around 1,000 cases, new cases of childhood asthma each year because of air pollution. But we also see the impacts on the brain. We know that the brain development is worse if you're exposed to higher air pollution levels. And, you know, there's about a 5-6% difference in working memory or superior working memories. These are measures of how good your brain is working, what we see in children. We also now know that children that are exposed to higher air pollution levels tend to be a bit fatter as well. So there are many impacts on children, and this is our future generation. We should preserve them. We should preserve their brains, no? That, I mean, that's what we need in the future. Yeah. I mean, that...
Really challenging times ahead, so...
Exactly, I mean, that we need more and more that... And so that's why it's very important to reduce the air pollution levels. And we know that the opposite is also that, for example, if kids are exposed to more green space, they have a much better brain functioning. So... And that's, you know, that's why we need the green space as well.
Yeah, I feel like it's better for my brain. And here comes Mr. Trolley with his trolley.
I know, he's making a lot of noise. No,
this is literally what I'm like with my suitcase, wandering through.
I know. So it's also in the street where you have the tiles.
The tiny
all
the tiles, it's so noisy.
I'm surprised that he doesn't have any, you know, ear protectors on that. I wonder why they always need to make this wheel so hard, because if you get soft little wheels, then they won't make any noise.
Noisy.
And just this hard and hard surface. I
maybe
mean,
you wouldn't notice it on a busy street, I'm not sure. Or maybe whoever's making them doesn't have to use them. So we're going to have to... No, that's really interesting. It's really interesting to talk to you and to hear about what's happening here in Barcelona and how it might apply to different places around the world.
Well, it's at the moment we're having Barcelona, but it applies to many cities in the world. And, you know, many cities are still being built as well. And I think we need to know, have more information and making sure that we build more sustainable cities, livable cities, healthy cities. I mean...
And also there's a lot of misinformation around some of these changes, and so having this granular detail, being able to say if you do X, the impact on people's health will be Y.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's very important. I mean, I know, you know, if you look at the UK, if you look at London with the low traffic neighbourhoods, I mean, there's so much to do around them.
So much,
I mean, it's just crazy. And now I saw the latest research coming out showing that, you know, there's a halving of the traffic within the low traffic neighborhoods, and there is no increase on the boundaries. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of people say it's going to be displacement. It's actually not. I mean, if take away space from cars, people just don't go there anymore, but also don't go on other places. I mean, they stop traveling by cars. So I think that's quite important. I mean, it's got benefits for everyone. Yeah, and there's still a lot of misconceptions, as what I said before, with retail sales, you know, that traffic gets displaced, I mean, that people can't get to their work anymore, and it is not true, I mean. And, you know, you saw the same with the ultra-low emission zones in London, also a lot of poo-ha around it, and so many people against, I mean, it affected only a very small part of the population. There was a very vocal part that was speaking up, and like it was like everyone was against it, but you know, most people benefited from it. I mean, it's better for their health, and now it's been implemented, it's gone quiet.
And I think sometimes you just need to see it for yourselves. I think people don't really believe until they see something. Like, it's hard to sit here now and imagine, with surrounded by trees and greenery and people walking down the middle of what would have been a road, trying to imagine it full of traffic. And I'm sure before, when it was full of traffic, it would have been very hard to imagine it as it is today, but this is this is how it works.
That's how it works. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, I find it still hard. You know, I came here a year ago and there were still lots of cars flying through. If you go to the next street, you still see an awful lot of cars going through, and that was how it was before. Of course, you know, it's also, by the way, it's not cheap to transform this. I mean, I think the whole thing cost about 50, 60 million.
Wow. I mean, because the materials are good, aren't they? I mean, established trees like this, they're not massive trees, but they're pretty big. Yeah. They cost a lot of money. They need watering. A lot of street trees die before they establish themselves. Yeah. Really nice paving slabs, these beautiful stone paving slabs.
There's a lot of thought was going into this. Yeah. There was a committee set up looking at everything. I mean, I was part of it. I was supposed to do the health. I mean, that I didn't have much to say because there were a lot of urban planners, engineers there that were much more vocal in this kind of things. And every little piece that was discussed, planned or whatever, because also it's not only what's happening above ground, also underground. There's a lot of things going on underground, so you can't just change it in one go because, you know, you can't plant the tree because then the leaves can't go any further or they destroying something. So it's very complicated. I think this was paid for by the next generation funding, you know, under this and so that's the kind of positive side of it.
I mean,
but when you hear, you've
done a great job.
It's great.
It's a really
great
job.
Wonderful that you could just sit here the whole night, see what's happening.
People watching.
People watching, exactly. See what's happening to their life. God, it looks like we don't have a life. I mean, just look.
This is quite nice. It's very relaxing. We've got some trees to look at.
Yeah.
Reduce our stress levels.
Yeah, I always wonder though, because now you see a few cyclists go, if there's going to be some conflict when you get too many cyclists, because you know it's still Barcelona's a lot pedestrian. And then sometimes, you know, if the cyclist goes too fast, then I was last week in Utrecht in the Netherlands, you know, and there you got so many cyclists, pedestrians almost don't have a chance. I think 80% of trips in Utrecht are now by cycling. That was also quite different 30 years ago. I remember going 30 years ago, still a lot of cars, and now you go there and you think, wow, how is this possible, such a big change, and it's such a wonderful city. It's
a great place to cycle. I've been there on bike.
You need to cycle pretty fast, and you need to keep up with the rest. I mean,
I think it was Utrecht. I got to ride on the back of someone else's bike, a local's bike, on the pannier rack. That was fun.
But I mean, I think it's for me also one of the examples how cities can change for the better. I mean, and of course, it's a bit easier. It's a big student town, you know, it's quite progressive, and all the students voting the left, the Greens. So that makes it a bit easier. It's a bit more stable. I mean, I was talking to one of the council members last week. We had the Healthy Cities Conference there. That's why I was there. And she was saying, yes, we could do this because, you know, we've been in power for 16 years. It takes a lot of time to make changes. But if you stay in power all the time, then you can actually make the changes, you can make plans. And this is what we've seen here in Barcelona now with the change. You know, Ada Colau was in power for 8 years. It took her 4 years to learn how to govern, how to, you know, pull the different leverages. And then the second term, she started doing things. And now we get a new mayor, it's different plans, and you just, you know, everything was going on, you just change it. I mean, and stupid. I mean, it shouldn't happen, I mean.
Yeah, I don't know what the solution to that is. But I guess that's democracy for you.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a democracy by 300 votes or so.
Or was it a really narrow election?
It was very narrow, yeah. I know, that's right. And that's
such a big impact, those 300 votes.
I know, it's crazy when you think about it, because, you know, this, we're sitting now at a few streets. I mean, this was going to be 2-3 times as big if they would have come back. I mean, perhaps they're still coming back in a few years, but when people experience this more and more, I mean, I must say there's a bit of jealousy, because the people in the next street don't like it as much.
Yeah.
Because they say, oh, look at this, the next street is nice, and...
Thank you so much, Mark. It's been so nice to talk to you and really interesting.
Lovely talking to you, and I hope that you enjoy your bike, that you get to cycle a bit more.
You've been listening to Streets Ahead. Our editor has been Claire Mansell. Let us know what you think at Pod Streets Ahead. Rate and review us and share the podcast with anyone you think might enjoy it. You can now also become a supporter on Patreon. Links for that and many of the things we've discussed in this episode are in the show notes.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.